Coming through good? Okay, great. I'm Michael Kelly. I'm the Linux guy. I work at in a group here at Microsoft that does our Linux device drivers for running Linux as a guest OS on Hyper-V and by implication in Azure. We also do the Linux agents for System Center. And then we work with the distro vendors to actually get the Linux images published up into Azure. So a number of different areas that we do the Linux work for. So I'm going to talk a little bit. This is a little bit higher level presentation. This would be more of a 200 level than a 300 level, because I want to give you a view of sort of where Microsoft's going with Linux, what our commitment is to Linux. We'll talk about running on Hyper-V. We'll talk about a little bit of the systems management stuff, and then talk about Azure. So cover those three main areas in a very brief 45 minutes here. Has anybody seen this slide before? Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella put this slide up publicly back last fall, I guess toward the end of 2014. This is a great slide. I love this slide. And I think this really, it surprised a few people. You saw some of the news articles in the trade press at the time that were freaking out a few people that Microsoft loves Linux. This is a different Microsoft than it was even a couple of years ago. Certainly in terms of how we approach Linux, in terms of how we approach open source. Certainly the change in CEO has made a difference, but a lot of this was underway even before the change in CEO. But I think it's come together as a critical mass in terms of what we're doing with Linux. And frankly, we're being more public about it. We're getting more press about what we're doing with Linux. So that's kind of at a top level one of the things that's going on. People say, so why is Microsoft getting involved with Linux in the first place? You know, we've been mortal enemies for a couple of decades, it would seem like, in the past. And one of the things, this is a real business for Microsoft these days. 20% or more of the VM hours in Azure are running Linux as opposed to running Windows. That's a real business for Microsoft. If you look at what's happening in System Center today manages hundreds of thousands of Linux and Unix servers in production environments in corporate data centers across the world these days. Many enterprises are running service providers. They're using Hyper-V. They're running Linux as a guest operating system on Hyper-V. And so, again, this is a business opportunity for Microsoft. Is it a fundamental change in philosophy? Are we all of a sudden going to start giving away software for free? No, that's not the plan. We've got, we believe that from what our customers are telling us, from what our partners are telling us, Linux is out there. It's real. If we're going to play in the data center, if we're going to play in the public cloud, we need to be doing Linux right alongside Windows Server. And so we've been doing it for a while. We've got these business opportunities, and we're going to continue to pursue Linux work on that basis. And we've actually been at this for a while. As I mentioned earlier, System Center first started supporting Linux 6 years ago, in June of 2009. We shipped the first version of Ops Manager that would monitor Linux and Unix systems. The Linux drivers for Hyper-V, 5 years or so now that they've been out there for being able to run Linux as a guest operating system. And then interestingly, in Azure, when we first introduced the IaaS capability, the infrastructure as a service, in April of 2013, Linux was there on day one, right alongside Windows. More and more, that's what you're going to see in terms of what Microsoft is offering, is that the Linux capabilities are there on day one, right alongside the Windows capabilities. And across the product development organizations, and this is what's really changed in the last 6, 12, 18 months. It's a fundamental part of what we do. Development team gets to work on some new feature. How does this work with Windows? How does this work with Linux? Question is also a key question that gets asked early on in the product development process. I've mentioned Hyper-V, System Center, Microsoft Azure. Certainly, there's a lot that we're doing there. Other areas of the company as well. Big data and analytics. So in Azure, there's the HD Insight service, which is based on Hadoop. That was originally introduced with Hadoop running on Windows. You may have seen there's now a preview out of Hadoop running on Linux in Azure. The underlying big data service that we're offering runs on Linux. And we recently made an acquisition of Revolution Analytics, the R programming language in the open source world, and that's been really championed by Revolution Analytics, now part of the Microsoft portfolio for doing analytics. .NET, of course, you've seen the announcement of .NET being open sourced, being ported to Linux, so that we can offer .NET applications running on Linux. DevOps and release management. You go back to the Build conference, Visual Studio announced the code editor. Runs on Linux, runs on Mac. Other capabilities in Visual Studio release management for building and deploying applications for Linux. Just yesterday at DockerCon, demoed using Docker and Visual Studio to deploy a container-based application both to Windows and to Linux machines. It was an application that had multiple containers, some of which ran on Windows, some of which ran on Linux. So a lot of work going on in this space. And again, just really this accelerating engagement as more and more Microsoft teams get involved in doing Linux right alongside their Windows server work. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what's happening in the on-premises in the data center. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, this is what we hear from customers. Customers are running Windows workloads. They're running Linux workloads. They just want them to work. There's no operating system war happening in the customer's data center. They're running both. And from a Microsoft standpoint, we want to be able to provide, you know, single hypervisor platform, single systems management set of tools. And so in this sense of, yes, we just want it to run, we get that. And I think we understand now, and the Microsoft teams are operating from this standpoint of, let's just run them both, not get into an operating system war here. If you look at what our data center investments are, and I've called this our Winix investments, and one of the key points that I'm making with this slide is that we're doing a huge amount of investment in Hyper-V, in data center software, compute virtualization, software-defined networking, software-defined storage. Probably been some presentations here or will be on some of those topics. Most of that work applies whether the guest operating system is Windows or Linux. We're making enhancements in that core infrastructure. It doesn't really matter if it's Linux or Windows as the guest OS. So all the network virtualization stuff, it works whether the guest is Windows or Linux. If we're going to do high-speed live migration using RDMA, that works whether the guest is Linux or whether it's Windows. So quality of service in the storage space, that works whether the guest is Linux or is Windows or whether it's Linux. And so these capabilities will continue to ship as part of Windows Server, part of Hyper-V, part of the new Azure Stack product. And it's important to understand that all of that work applies to what we're trying to do with Linux in addition to what we're doing with Windows. Now, certainly, there is some stuff that we're doing that is Linux-specific. To make Linux run great as a guest operating system on Hyper-V, you've heard me here before talking, perhaps, if you were here last year, about the Linux integration services that we have to do that guest integration with Hyper-V. There is some stuff that needs the cooperation of the guest operating system. And so we've done things, you know, like the Generation 2 VMs with Secure Boot now possible with the Windows Server 2016 version of Hyper-V. We have networking performance that's now really at wire speed in virtual environments, and I've got another slide. We'll drill down into that. The dynamic memory, the online backup, et cetera. These are things that do require the cooperation of the guest operating system, and so we continue to do that Linux-specific development work for those areas that need it. From a management standpoint of Linux running on Hyper-V, you've got all your standard management interfaces. So you can use Hyper-V Manager, you can use System Center VMM, you can use PowerShell to manage Linux VMs that are running on Hyper-V. You're going to manipulate the VM, you're going to start VM, stop VM, those kinds of PowerShell operations against Hyper-V. They work whether the VM is Linux or whether it's Windows. In terms of how we engage with the Linux community, of course, we're continuing on the path that we've been on really for the last 3 or 4 or 5 years here. We do have Microsoft developers that are writing those Linux device drivers. One path to get those device drivers is that we package those as the Linux integration services. They're up on the Microsoft Download Center. You can get your Linux distro. You can install it on Hyper-V. You can download the LIS package and install that into your CentOS version, for example, and get the Linux integration services to get all of the tight integration and the high performance. The other path, of course, that we take is we do work with the upstream Linux community. All of these device driver work goes out to the Linux kernel mailing list. We get comments, we get feedback. They say, no, you should have done it this way. We'll take that feedback, we'll make tweaks, we'll resubmit. Eventually, those drivers end up in the upstream Linux kernel. along with all the other device drivers, along the rest of the Linux kernel code. And then we do work with the distro vendors, of course, with Red Hat, with Canonical around Ubuntu, with SUSE, with Oracle for Oracle Linux, et cetera. And we get those drivers incorporated into the Linux distros so that when you grab that distro, you get your recent RHEL 7.1, for example, all those device drivers are already there. You get Ubuntu 14.04, you get Ubuntu 15.04, et cetera. And so that's a major work that we have on an ongoing basis. There's always a new Linux version that's coming out in one of the distros, and so we're very tight with the distro vendors. We're on the phone a couple of times a month, making sure we sort this stuff out with email and get those drivers into the Linux distros so that you can just install them and go and have great support on Hyper-V. The as we're updating and continuing developing these device drivers for Linux, where do you find out what's in your particular distro? If you want to go back in time a little bit, maybe to a RHEL 6.4 or 6.5 or Ubuntu 12.04, we've got quite a bit of documentation now up on TechNet where you can go. If you look on TechNet for Hyper-V and Linux, you'll find a whole section about running Linux as a guest operating system on Hyper-V. We've got a separate page for each of the major distro families that we support, and you can go through and see, all right, is Jumbo Frames supported with the version that I've got? The VRSS feature, which is one of the high-performance features for networking, you can see, all right, it's there in RHEL 7.0 and 7.1, or since 7.1, it's not in 7.0. And then, of course, we have the Linux Integration Services. So that column there with LIS 4.0 on it is if you've got the Microsoft downloaded package, that'll tell you what the features are you get if you've got that particular package installed in your Linux distro. So we're continuing to add to that documentation to keep it up to date as we make changes to the Linux Integration Services drivers. Let me say a little bit about the LIS 4.0 package. We originally shipped LIS 3.5 back in December of 2013, so about 18 months ago. And that had sort of been the standard for what you needed to run Linux on Hyper-V. Back in April, end of April, first of May, we shipped LIS 4.0, major upgrade, newest version of our downloadable package. Again, it's for use with Red Hat, CentOS, and the Red Hat compatible kernel version of Oracle Linux. Goes all the way back to the 5.5 version. And so this can be installed. We've enhanced the installation process now. With LIS 3.5, the rule used to be if LIS was built in, you could not install the Microsoft package on top of it. That's now been changed. Even if LIS is built in, you can install this LIS as an upgrade on top of what's already there. So you can install into a Linux VM that doesn't have any Linux integration services. You can install it if it's got 3.5. We'll upgrade to 4.0. You can install it if it's got the built-in LIS, and that will give you additional capabilities beyond what was built in at that point in time. If the benefits of upgrading, you get all the latest and greatest performance improvements, particularly on networking throughput, and I'll bring a slide there. Continuing to fix some bugs, getting more and more robust here. And particularly if you're running CentOS VMs, particularly if you're running in Azure, there's a number of bug fixes that you need in order to run reliably in the Azure environment. Azure has very different kind of disk I/O latencies, very different kind of network latencies, and there's some bug fixes that are needed in LIS to deal with those latencies. I will comment from the Red Hat standpoint, you can install this in any RHEL version. We are certified for RHEL running on Hyper-V. You can go to the Red Hat web pages, see the certification. That certification is with the LIS that's built in, that we've gone through the Red Hat processes on. If you install LIS 4.0 as a separate add-on to your RHEL installation, at that point you're no longer in the certified version, and that potentially affects your support stance with your RHEL subscription. So just be aware of that. To mention networking a little bit, so we've done a lot of work over the past year on networking throughput. We've implemented as many of the performance-enhancing features, receive-side scaling, send-side scaling, the various TCP offloads, tightened a lot of code paths, done a lot of instrumentation. And those features are called out in the TechNet grids to see which versions have this. Our basic performance measurement scheme: get a couple of Hyper-V hosts, connect them with a 10 gig Ethernet physical, and then put a Linux guest on each of those Hyper-V hosts. How fast can we move data between those two Linux guests? So we make use of iPerf, iPerf 3 in particular. We're using a number of threads here so that we can get a lot of connections going in parallel as you would typically have on a server environment. And then with that 10 gig Ethernet, we're seeing 9.4 gigabits in throughput. Basically the same as what you would get with a Windows guest, what you would get with Linux running on another hypervisor. We're basically maxing out what you can do on the wire between Linux guests now. So that was our goal. We're now moving on to, let's change that 10 gig Ethernet into a 40 gig Ethernet. And I think on premises, just in the last week or two, I think we've seen 31 gigabits per second on a 40 gig Ethernet. So if you go into the Azure world and you get G-Series machines, you actually do have 40 gig connections in your Azure G-Series. We're not seeing quite the 31 gigabits in Azure, but we're seeing 20-something coming off the G-Series machines in Azure as well. So getting good network throughput now. This has been a huge thing in terms of what we've been working on over the past year, and we feel like that we're there now without having to go to SRIOV or other things. Now, we're still going to be, you know, one of the things we're moving forward to is get the implementation for SRIOV for Linux guests running on Hyper-V. So that work is underway and is making good progress at this point. We'll hopefully start to see that pop out of the oven in 6 months or so here, I think. But just getting the low-hanging fruit and getting the basic network performance up to par was kind of the key thing before we start to look at moving to SRIOV or DPDK or some of the other technologies for getting higher packet rates through the system. A little bit about what's new in Windows Server 2016. So these things that are available now with the technical preview 2 that you have access to and can download. So going to a Generation 2 virtual machine, you now have UEFI boot, of course. That's been there on the Windows side for Gen 2 VMs. You could boot a Linux machine with UEFI as well, but you didn't have secure boot. And so that's now fixed and available as part of the 2016 release. And we've tested the latest versions of RHEL and CentOS and Ubuntu, SLES, et cetera, and that works. Another new feature, of course, is the hot add remove of virtual NICs. So you can go into your running Hyper-V with your Linux guest. You got ETH0, and you do ifconfig, and you see ETH0. You go into Hyper-V, and say, add me a vNIC. While the VM is still running, you add the vNIC. You go back to your Linux guest. You run ifconfig, and voila, you got ETH1 in there. And it's working, and it's live. You can connect to it. So I do a demo in the longer sessions where I can show that. And then similarly, you can remove the NIC in Hyper-V, and voila, ETH1 disappears from within your Linux guest. So magic. So that's probably the two new things. These are specific to Windows Server 2016. Most of the other things that I've talked about around the network throughput, the other features that we're adding at the Linux integration services, those do not require the 2016 version of Hyper-V. So all of the network performance improvements, all of that stuff works with the 2012 R2 version that's available today. Say a little bit about System Center. So System Center Configuration Manager, System Center Operations Manager, System Center Virtual Machine Manager. Those are all today in the 2012 release, 2012 R2 release, able to monitor, manage, deploy Linux VMs. One of the things we're doing in System Center 2016 is to increase the range of things that we have management packs for in order to do operational monitoring. So even with the 2012 R2 release, we've got the Java application servers, WebLogic, Tomcat, JBoss, and WebSphere. One of the things that's new now is the LAMP stack. So we have new management packs for monitoring Apache HTTPD. We have management pack for MySQL, also includes MariaDB. And so that's available in preview now as part of the System Center 2016 technical preview too. So, and we're looking to continue to expand the range of sort of core open source software components that we have monitoring of. So we're continuing to take input. You know, MongoDB is one that shows up on the list a lot. Maybe Cassandra, Nginx. There's no, a good half dozen or more of these open source packages that customers build into their apps, want to be able to monitor. And so we're looking to continue to expand that list of capabilities going forward here. One of the other areas that's new, this was first shipped, is PowerShell desired state configuration. On the Windows side of the world, this originally shipped as part of Windows Server 2012 R2 for Windows to do declarative configuration of a Windows machine. Back at the Ignite conference in May, we announced that we now have PowerShell DSC able to do configuration of Linux machines. So you can create a declarative statement of what you want on your Linux machine, the packages you want installed, the files you want set up, the permissions, the services that are running, and PowerShell DSC will go make it so on that Linux server. We love to do a great demo of showing setting up a website on a Windows machine, and then the same thing on the Linux machine where you need to install Apache, set up a couple of vdirs, set the files and permission up there. The great thing is on the Windows machine, it takes about 2 or 3 minutes. The demo on the Windows on the Linux machine finishes in about 45 seconds. And so Linux is able to grab that Apache package, install it, grab WordPress and install it, set up all the right files, and actually serve up a web page much more quickly than Windows can do these days. So, but both setups being done, being driven by PowerShell DSC. So announcing that this is available, it's available as a download from the Microsoft Download Center. And of course, in keeping with our open source practices here, PowerShell DSC for Linux is open source. It's a GitHub project. We've got people who are finding a few bugs here and there, contributing, letting us know what needs to be fixed. And so we'll continue to engage the open source community there. One of the questions people say is, okay, so PowerShell DSC, yeah, isn't that a lot like Chef? Isn't that a lot like Puppet? And the answer is yes. In terms of the grand scope of software that's out there in the world today, DSC does that declarative configuration in a similar way that Chef and Puppet do. And frankly, we're not trying to compete with Chef and Puppet. You know, where we see DSC coming into play is if you're in an environment where you're running Windows, you're running Linux as well, you're in a Microsoft cloud, and you want some consistency, the same kind of tooling across those two environments, then we'll offer DSC and say, hey, that's a great tool to use. On the other hand, if you're in a world where you're purely in a Linux environment, you've already got an investment in Chef recipes, for example, party on, use Chef. We're not going to try to tell you that you shouldn't use Chef. And if we build larger scale constructs, as things get built in Azure, Azure templates come into play. If you want to use DSC in Azure, great, go ahead and do that. If you want to use Chef, go ahead and do that as well. We're going to make sure that we don't put, we're not hardwiring DSC into anything to make you use it. We're going to make sure that if Chef is what you want to use, or Puppet's what you want to use, or Ansible, Salt, whatever, we want to make it equally easy for you to plug that into your environment. But we're going to continue to develop the DSC side of the world, for those scenarios like these, where that commonality across the Windows and the Linux world is important for you. So, again, downloadable, source code's on GitHub. It does require the Open Management Infrastructure, OMI. And if you're familiar with what we've done on the System Center side of the world, OMI is also the basis for the Ops Manager agent and for the Config Manager agent in System Center. And as we get to the 2016 release of System Center and with DSC, we'll use a single installation of OMI on your Linux box as the basis for DSC, for Ops Manager, and for Config Manager. And the different versions of Linux that you see supported here, guess what? That's the same versions of Linux that System Center will manage. So we want to keep that set of Linux distros that we support consistent across the different tools that we're offering for systems management from Microsoft. DSC for Linux is based on this concept of resources that plug into the DSC engine. We've got a number of resources that we've implemented sort of out of the gate for DSC for Linux. And so you can manage an archive file. You can manage, create a file, create a directory, manage the permissions on those directories, packages, whether it's an RPM on a Red Hat system or a deb package on an Ubuntu system. Both forms are supported. Services, if you want to set up Apache as a service, for example. So that just gives you a quick view of the capabilities that we're offering out of the box. And now we're working on the ability for you to write your own resources. So just like on the PowerShell DSC for Windows side of the world, you can create your own DSC resources. Fairly shortly here, we'll have instructions and capabilities for creating custom resources on the Linux side of the world as well. So an example configuration, this one's a real simple one that shows, hey, I want to have Apache HTTPD installed. I want that package present with the Yum package manager. I want the SSL module present. And I want that Apache HTTPD running as a service under init. Very simple declarative configuration. So this just gives you a flavor. A real-world example will probably have a few more entries than that in it, but that kind of gives you a sense of how you set it up and make that declarative configuration there. All right, I'm going to shift gears now and talk a little bit about the Azure side of the world. So DSC on-premises, Hyper-V on-premises, System Center mostly on-premises. Let's take a look at what we're doing with Azure and both the Windows and the Linux side of the world. Again, there's a huge range of new Azure capabilities that are coming. You know, every month there's new stuff in the IaaS space, new PaaS services, new hybrid services where Azure works together with on-premises, and of course new worldwide data centers, new VM sizes and so forth. And sort of the key North Star here now is that when we ship new stuff in Azure, it needs to work for both Windows and Linux. So, you know, the new G series came out, had to work for both Windows and Linux. The Azure backup of VMs works for Windows and Linux. The HPC workloads, HPC has been available for Windows. I got a slide here. We're going to get the HPC for Linux here real soon, coming up in the month of July to close that gap. But fundamentally, in fact, we've held up shipping new Azure features because it didn't work yet on the Linux side. In the last 6 months, we've had a feature or two where we had an issue on the Linux side, and the ship date got held up until we got the Linux side fixed so that we could, you know, maintain this North Star that says it works for both operating systems. Certainly, infrastructure as a service, just give me a VM. You can get your Windows image from the gallery, you can get your Linux image from the gallery, you can upload your own image, whether it's Windows or whether it's Linux, get a community image out of VM Depot. There's a huge number of Linux images of all different sorts in VM Depot. There's some free BSD images in VM Depot as well. And so you see the different Linux operating systems listed here that are enabled and supported and running in Azure at this point. So again, that balance the equivalence of supports Windows and supports Linux. So that's kind of the fundamental basics of what we're offering in Azure. It's a very open cloud. There's a whole bunch of stuff that the Azure team is doing. I mentioned DockerCon last 2 days here, this first 2 days of this week, all the work that's been going on there, Kubernetes running in Azure, all kinds of different Chef extensions that are in Azure, Puppet stuff that's in Azure. And so there's some things where Microsoft is actually engaged with that third party. We've got some Microsoft specifically integrated stuff. But frankly, you can go get a Linux VM in Azure and you can run anything you want. And so there's a huge number of other things, MongoDB, ClearDB, that customers are running in Azure today in a Linux environment as part of Azure. And so we just want to make clear that we are wide open. We're doing partnerships with people that we never would have done partnerships with in the past. And the business model in Azure is come run it here. We're not going to fight with you about what the operating system is, what the package is, et cetera. It's a wide open environment. I want to talk about big compute and HPC a little bit. So certainly the HPC capability, the Azure A8 and A9 series VMs that have the InfiniBand RDMA capability. Running HPC workloads in a public cloud like Azure is one of those things that just really makes great sense. There's so many existing scenarios that are easy to move to the cloud. And then frankly, there are these scenarios that it's just not, doesn't make economic sense for you to run and have the hardware on premises for running these HPC workloads. Maybe you're a small org and it doesn't make sense to pay for those on-premises servers, or maybe you just want to do something really huge on occasion. And again, it's very easy to get that kind of compute power in an Azure kind of environment. And so a huge number of different kinds of workloads that this makes sense for in terms of running in an Azure kind of environment. And so we're continuing to expand these capabilities. As I mentioned earlier, this has up to now been based on Windows and Windows' ability to take advantage of the InfiniBand RDMA controller there. Those Linux drivers for the InfiniBand RDMA, we're in a private preview at this point. We're running workloads that are Linux-based in Azure with a few customers, and we'll see an announcement in the next few weeks here of general availability of those Linux drivers for doing these kinds of workloads. So stay tuned for that. We expect this to be some fairly big uptake in the Azure environment to finally get the Linux workloads now able to take advantage of this. I mentioned earlier PaaS services on Linux. This has been one of the things that's really been a change within Microsoft, and I think kind of represents the mindset shift within the company, in that Azure services, you know, since day one of Azure, have run on Windows. So you go to Azure, you get a website, it's running on Windows. You went to HD Insight to do Hadoop, that was running on Windows. Machine learning runs on Windows. So the underlying operating system for all these services was always Windows. That's changing now. We are now starting to offer services underlying that are running on the underlying Linux operating system. People want to know, so which Linux is it? It's the Ubuntu operating system. That's the one that we have picked at this point. We have configured that to meet Azure security requirements, to meet, put our operational tools in there so that Microsoft personnel working in an Azure data center can work with that Linux operating system. So certainly Azure data centers get audited. There's all of the PCI, all of the FedRAMP, all of those requirements. We're now making sure that we can pass those requirements for services that are running on Linux as opposed to running on Windows. And all the operational tools, so the ops guys that are doing monitoring, they're doing diagnosing, they're patching. So, you know, you get a Linux security vulnerability. If that service is running on Linux, our ops guys now have to be doing that patching to make sure that that service stays secure and that we can continue to pass all the necessary audits. And so this is a huge change within the Azure operational environment to make sure that our ops guys can operate not only the Windows services, but also the Linux services. So HD Insight is the first big one that is running on Linux. There's others in the pipeline that are starting this uptake of running their services on Linux. And frankly, our philosophy here is if the application, if the software that you're trying to run, some of this stuff was just, it was born on Linux. It runs naturally on Linux. We're going to not any longer do the effort to port that software to Windows just so that we can say we're running it on Windows. If it naturally runs on Linux, let's just run the service on Linux and cut out all this unnecessary porting work. So that's what's going to be going on here. Sure, some of this software is, you know, if you're going to run SQL Server, Microsoft SQL Server, sure, that's going to run on Windows. But if we, you know, if you want to run a MySQL service or something like that, that's going to be make much more natural sense to run it on Linux, Hadoop running on Linux, a whole variety of things that you can think of there. The other thing, of course, with Azure is, suppose I want to access Azure. I'm making use of Azure services, maybe I'm a shop that I'm running Linux on my desktop systems. I'm running a Mac OS X. How do I interact with this Azure system? Certainly, in my browser, if I'm going to the portal, the browser is HTML5, so that's good. Doesn't matter if my browser is running on Mac, running on Linux, running on Windows. I can make use of the portal. But if I'm really starting to engage this in my business, I'm going to want to automate. automate. I'm going to want to not do everything manually by clicking and pointing and clicking in a browser. I'm going to want to script it. And so the Azure SDK, if I'm running on Windows, that SDK is based on PowerShell. But of course, if I'm based on Linux or Mac OS X, I don't have PowerShell there. What do I use for the SDK? And so we do have a Node.js package, which is the Azure CLI. It lets you automate those Azure activities from your Linux machine. Got a screenshot here of the web page. You can download that SDK. It's a Node.js package, lets you automate interacting with Azure, create a new VM, start a VM, stop a VM, list my storage usage, a whole range of activities that you would want to automate as part of your Azure deployment. So again, we're trying to make sure that your Azure usage is accessible from Linux machines, from Mac OS X, as well as from the Windows side of the world. So I'm going to wrap up real quickly here. Microsoft loves Linux, believe it. I've got a bag of buttons we've been giving out here. Got my Microsoft Loves Linux buttons. If you want to come by and grab a handful, pin one on your bag, pin one on your shirt, take a few back to your colleagues and freak them out. Be happy to have you come get a Microsoft Loves Linux button. But I hope at a top level, the message I want to get across is this is not Steve Ballmer's Microsoft. We are embracing Linux. We love Linux. We're going to continue our investment there. It's just going to ramp up from here. And we want to be able to run and manage Linux in your on-premises environment, in your Azure environment, and do a great job of it. So. Thank you very much. Questions? I've kind of run through a lot of stuff here in a hurry. Try to stay on schedule here. I guess I've got 4 minutes if there are any topics before the next speaker comes up. Yes?
When you were talking about the Hyper-V, you're talking about Linux
yes.
a lot. What about BSD?
What about
BSD?
Okay.
Support BSD, and do you go to the BSD groups? And
yeah, great question. Just from a time standpoint, I did not put a BSD slide in the slide deck. But yes, so we have what we call BIS, the BSD Integration Services. They are in the free BSD code tree. As of the 10.1 release. 10.0 has most of them in there. They're fully in there with the 10.1 release. We're still working on some of the network improvements. What's up there now in BSD 10.1 probably only gets you like 3 gigabits on that 10 gigabit link. In the lab, we're up to around 7 or 8 gigabits now, and so that development work is actively going on at this point. We had people at BSDCAN last week. Was it last week? In Ottawa. Yeah, a couple weeks ago in Ottawa, we had somebody there sort of representing what we're doing. We're starting an engagement with the OpenBSD community as well. There's been some interest expressed there in getting the drivers moved over to OpenBSD. And so I'm hoping that the community is going to engage with us to help make that happen as well. So there's a free BSD image in VM Depot that you can run in Azure. As well, and we've got there's a virtual appliance. Somebody's got an appliance. A Citrix, I think, has got a BSD-based virtual appliance that's now running in Azure and available in the Azure Marketplace as well. So we are engaging with several different virtual appliance vendors that are based on FreeBSD to get those running on Hyper-V and in Azure as well.
Quick question about your interfaces. The interfaces between the hypervisor and the pair of virtual drivers in Linux Integration Service or BSD Integration Services, is that documented anywhere apart from the source code?
It is not. The question was whether those interfaces are documented. They are not. We do not have a document someplace. And I think that's ultimately been the decision of the Hyper-V team not to publish those interfaces. I don't know what the full reason behind that is. Obviously, you can go look at the source code but and see what's happening there, but that's a question that really has to go to the Hyper-V team.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised because the technology is actually very interesting. It's apparently close to what Xen does. It's more efficient than what, say, KVM does.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, and I was curious, actually, with your Linux-hosted you mentioned that you're doing hosting on with Linux as the underlying host OS.
In Azure, yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, and is that using a KVM type?
No. So that's the hypervisor in Azure is 100% Hyper-V. So if we have, when we have HD Insight in Azure running on Linux, that'll be Linux running on a Hyper-V host as the hypervisor. So there's no KVM, there's no Xen in Azure. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
If somebody wants a button, come by and grab something out of the bag there. So.